I'll tell you what.
This is the Rich Eisen Show.
All about the quarterbacks, and the draft did not disappoint on that front.
Live from the Rich Eisen Show studio in Los Angeles.
He said he thought that Michael Penix Jr. was a better choice at quarterback than Drake May, which is saying a lot.
Today's guests, NFL Network analyst Daniel Jeremiah, Eagles general manager Howie Roseman, senior writer for Sports Illustrated Chris Mannix, plus your phone calls, latest news, and more. And now, it's Rich Eisen.
Oh, yes. Welcome to this edition of the Rich Eisen Show back here in Los Angeles, California, after our residency in the great state of Michigan. The Detroit draft, a monster hit, is in the book. 775,000 people were in attendance over the two nights and the third day of the NFL draft there. So much to talk about. Daniel Jeremiah, I can't quit him. We spent so much time together last week. He's our first guest in about 20 minutes' time. The general manager of the Philadelphia Eagles, Howie Roseman, is going to continue a tradition unlike any other, being the general manager to join us right after the NFL draft. He's right smack dab in the middle of the show, and then Chris Mannix of Sports Illustrated will be smack dab in the middle of those guests in studio to talk about what's going on in the NBA playoffs. The Minnesota Timberwolves just broomed the Phoenix Suns out of these playoffs. We've got an elimination that just took place, and Anthony Edwards' star is meteorically rising. We also have the Knicks and the Sixers throwing haymakers at one another. The Knicks lead that series 3-1. We saw the Lakers stave off being swept. We saw the Clippers blow a 31-point lead only to have to come back from a 1-point deficit to win that game in the final throws yesterday. So much going on in the NBA playoffs. We'll discuss that with Chris Mannix, as well as shortly before going on the air, we now have a sanctioned fight between a 58 and a 27-year-old individual. The Mike Tyson-Jake Paul fight has been sanctioned. Wow. It's going to be 8 2-minute rounds. There's going to be 14-ounce gloves used. So Chris Mannix, perfectly timed. The last thing he sort of really wanted to talk about. That's not true, though. It's great to talk about. He's going to talk about it on this show. And there's 844-204-RICH number to dial here on the show. Good to see you over there, Christopher.
Hey,
how are you?
What's up, man? I'm great.
DJ Mikey D.
Welcome back.
Thank you.
Hey,
you held down a fort.
Yes, I was here alone.
You were.
Actually, I had someone else with me.
Wow.
Wait, what?
Wait a second.
I had a minute.
I'm here.
We
didn't
know
on the couch with all my friends.
I just did exactly what Brock would say. And it was actually, I was very sad without you guys here.
So you had a friend here?
No, I had an engineer with me.
Oh, okay.
I thought you had a friend.
No, I mean, come on.
Could be just like anybody. From Dell 2 Foes Instagram.
But you guys killed it. It looked great. It was sounded great. Everybody, it was amazing.
Thank you.
I was able to watch it, which was cool.
We had a blast. We were really lucky. It looked amazing.
TJ, the candle's lit.
Good to see you, sir. How are you?
Well, I mean, there's a reunion happening in Big D today, so I feel great.
What's a reunion?
Reunion is we're welcoming someone back home. Right?
What's that? Who's that?
Mr. Feed Me.
Oh, that's right. We got to go in the kettle. We had to search in the kettle to find the Dallas Cowboys. Latest acquisition.
Change that picture.
I think he's getting paid from what's in the kettle.
Okay. What's left? Great line, Chris. That's a good one. Well done. He got his money. That's a good one.
You know,
there is less pie.
That's true.
We'll talk about that later on.
Thanksgiving.
And there's a new star receiver in the National Football League. His name is Keon Coleman. And if he doesn't have a deal with Macy's by now, he better.
What are we doing?
What are we doing?
Let's go.
So we'll hit that later on. But listen, in the NFL draft, 257 picks, one to last. And there's one that still stands out. It still stands out from Thursday night.
It's
the sorest of draft thumbs that I've seen in the history of drafts and thumbs. And it is the 8th overall pick from Thursday night. And I'm sure some Falcons fans are like, really? You're still beating this drum, Rich? And certainly there might be some in the Falcons organization that would be like, there's a page. We're turning it. We've turned the page. If you've got a great quarterback room, let's talk about that.
Oh, no.
And, you know,
Michael Penix Jr., drafted 8th overall. And again, I'm not bringing this up because I think he's not worthy of the 8th overall pick. He sure is. He could, out of all the guys being drafted, I thought that whole stuff about dropping out of the first round made no sense to me. It never did, but it is a league where Will Levis dropped out of the first round last year, and I didn't think that was going to happen, and it did, so who knows? Mm-hmm. And kid is just electric. He's got a great story, as you could see on the screen, a great smile, and he looks great in Falcons colors. You know what I mean? Like, this guy
does.
Can spin it. So, not about that. It's just about the fact that he's drafted there after Kirk Cousins is signed for $180 million, $100 of it guaranteed, $90 of it being paid out over the next 2 years. And I understand. I might be falling into just the same old rut here as everybody else in our sports business because we're not leading with Zeke. Sorry to say today. I know it's a Cowboys thing, and Zeke's back with the Cowboys, and I should be you know, the rest. I mean, that's in the manual of hosting a three-hour-long sports talk radio simulcast.
Must lead.
That's
in the
manual.
Must lead.
And then when it's Zeke coming back, sorry, I'm still stuck on this.
You didn't write it.
And the Falcons can understand it because Raheem Morris, in his post-draft press conference, had this to say about the chatter surrounding this choice.
I hate for it to be like the story of the draft. I know it will be. That's just how our world is based and is driven. But I can't say it gets annoying. I can't say it's annoying. No, because it's what people want to see. It's piqued more interest. I feel like, you know, what's Kelsey's girlfriend name? I feel like her right now. Just based off. I'm Taylor Swift right now, and Terry's Kelsey, I guess. I mean, we're making this thing popular, man. I don't know what that is.
What are we doing?
He's tired, guys. He's getting tired. We should probably wrap this up. We're going to
we're famous right now. I don't know.
That's true.
Well, he said the line of the day. What are we doing? I think everyone's wondering that.
Well, I mean, and plus, if there's anybody that can understand that things get slap happy after 257 picks, it is a guy who spent the last 20 minutes on the air of a 3-day stint on NFL Network saying, let's hurry this up because I have a flight to catch. And I did get a lot of tweets from people saying, hey, did you catch your plane? And I did. This just in. I did. And you'll be happy to know the person in front of me mm-hmm. reclined before I did.
Wow.
And you know what I did? You know what I did in response? I reclined.
Yeah.
Weak.
Because you know what?
Weak.
That's the way it works. All right. I don't want to go there. Stop.
Weak. I'm just saying. He saw it.
Stop.
He saw it.
To continue the analogy, I guess, am I the tortured poet here?
Well, society, tortured poets.
Yeah, the department, but that's okay.
Department, oh, whatever.
Listen, reason why we're talking about it is not for clicks. I just still cannot compute because this is going to be a storyline all season long. All season long. How does it work? Because normally it's the other way around. You have the bridge quarterback costing you very little, not $100 million guaranteed. But of course, the Falcons don't consider him as a quarterback to be bridged to because eventually Penix is going to play once Cousins is done winning Super Bowls there. And Cousins is not a bridge quarterback because he's their current quarterback, and that's the way they're going to have it. And at some point, they're going to get through all this awkwardness and they'll get to the Jordan Love phase that the Packers are in right now. All the awkwardness of the Rodgers years long gone. Just like the Favre awkwardness with Rodgers was long gone for a dozen years. They're going to get to that sweet spot. And everybody's going to look at them and say, yeah, you were right to use the 8th overall pick on Penix. Because that's where they're at right now. They're at, like, this is the best possible situation for them to be in. You may not buy it, but Terry Fontenot thinks exactly that. This is what he had to say.
If you'd have told me in January that when we're sitting there and and the quarterback, you're wondering who's going to be our quarterback next year, right? And we're getting ready. Okay, now Raheem's in the building and we're sitting down. Okay, what's the first thing that we got to do? The elephant in the room, as Raheem called it. We got to figure out this quarterback situation. If you'd have told me at that time that we're going to have Kirk Cousins for right now and Michael Penix for the future, I would have told you it was a pipe dream. I would have told you that if you'd have told me that, I would have said, sign me up for that.
Now, the issue with that is we're going to reach out for Terry because I can't keep talking about him without inviting him on this program. And he was great coming on before, and we had great conversations. But I'm just wondering if sodium pentothal is injected, and we're meeting the parents, okay? And I'm marking the heart monitor on the detector here. That if I had told him that in January, after Morris was hired, who by the way is a terrific coach, and we'll get to that in a second. If I had told Terry, you do get Cousins and you do get Penix, he probably would have said, oh, Penix dropped all the way to us in the second round? No, Terry, you used the 8th overall selection on him. Would he have then said, oh, sign me up? Don't know about that. 8th overall picks play fast. That's how it works. And on top of it, it's not the same as Jordan Love and Aaron Rodgers. Rodgers had a dozen years, at least, a decade and a half in the system, in the building, in the fan base, in the mind's eye, trophy in the case. Cousins has no such buildup with this fan base. If you don't think a 2 years ago frequent Kirk Cousins game crops up, you've got the Saints in town. Because I'm choosing the team that the Falcons fans want to beat the most. And he has a couple of interceptions. You don't think the fans are going to be going nuts in Atlanta and screaming for Michael Penix Jr.?
I have an idea. What if Sunday 1 o'clock games are for Kirk, and then Thursday, Monday, Sunday night are for Penix?
Now, you're saying this to point out the absurdity of this, because it is absurd on its face that you would sign somebody for that much money and then use the 8th overall pick to not supplement the obvious tight window for somebody in his mid-30s, fresh to town, throwing out first pitches at the Braves game, talking about wanting to stay there the rest of his career, coming off an Achilles injury. You need to supplement him with a draft choice that can win now. Plug and play. Let's go. You're pointing out the absurdity of it because it is absurd.
But why don't you subscribe to the theory that they're pushing, which is like, look, if we're as good as we think we can be and we have the potential to be, we're going to be picking in the late 20s for the next decade. So why not get our guy after Kirk? Kirk is 36, coming off of a major, major injury.
All of that, that response, the fact that you need to have a good backup quarterback because he's coming off of injury.
Or just because 130 quarterbacks have played in the last 2 years.
Excuse me. All of those things are said as a spin to cover up the fact that you don't do what they've just done in the NFL, which is look a guy in the middle of the 30s of his career, at the end of his career, and say, leave Justin Jefferson, leave Kevin O'Connell, leave the fan base, leave the schools that you have your kids in, leave the life that you have to come here, and then call that guy while they're on the clock to say, we're taking a 24-year-old that is really good and can play now. You don't do that.
But this is not the first time this has happened in the history of the NFL.
I am explaining to you the way I'm feeling. I understand what you're saying. None of that stuff of we need to get another quarterback for the future, we need to make sure Kirk Cousins isn't going to be the starter this year right away, we need to have a better backup plan, was not a single whit of it over the last 6 weeks until they drafted Michael Penix. Now it's like, well, this is a smart move, which it can be in the long run, and I'm happy. Chris, for you, Certainly because happy wife, happy life.
He's very excited about it.
If the Falcons get a trophy in the case for Penix or two or three, happy to come on the air and say, mea culpa, my bad. You know, I never have a problem doing that. Yeah. I just don't understand this method. And Raheem Morris came into Atlanta, rightfully so. Raheem Morris came into Atlanta with the MO of great coach, molder of men. The number of people that he has coached in the past to say, I will follow this man into the fire. I lost track of every people going to the Hall of Fame, people playing Pro Bowls, and I trust him. And I hear from the Rams organization how great he is. And honestly, he's going to have to need all of that if Cousins does not perform very well. He's going to need all of it. And then heaven forbid if Penix isn't ready either. And we'll see what happens there. But this is what he had to say about what task lies in front of him on that front. Hit it.
I won't ride the emotional roller coaster. And I won't let our organization ride the emotional roller coaster. When you make those decisions, you can't be off of what everybody else thinks and what they say. You know, those reactions are going to happen. You know, some of the most bold decisions in anything we've ever done, not just football, they always happen when it comes with a little bit of rifts. And we're not going to run away from those things and those rifts if we believe in it. And we certainly believe in it. And we won't waver on that. This doesn't come without certain expectations from everyone else, right? And that's what I mean by not riding the emotional roller coaster. We came up with a decision. This is what we plan to do. And Kirk does not have to look over his shoulder every time he throws a bad pass. Like, that is not the case. Like, yep. So I know I'm going to have to tell you guys once or twice that that is not the case.
Okay. We will see. And I can't wait to watch it. And by the way, I am not going to be one of those that just says, oh, gosh, I was wrong. I'm going to start coming here every day and carping on the Falcons to make it seem. I would love nothing for you, anybody who I know who roots for the Falcons, to be wrong on it. I just know that in this league, you want to win now. And you want to win on a rookie contract with your rookie. And suddenly now, instead of going to get the rookie and planning on getting the rookie and having a veteran quarterback to be there in case the rookie's not ready, or to be there to bridge the rookie that is affordable so you can win around the rest of the system, you now go and get a guy who you're spending a ton of money on. Half of his rookie contract might be, in best case scenario, one would think, flushed while he stands there watching. And now, I guess the concept that used to be, if you have two quarterbacks, you have none. We're now in the day and age of, if you don't have three quarterbacks, you've got none. If you have two, you have none. Used to be that way. Now in the NFL, it's if you don't have three, and if you don't have your rookie while you have your veteran, you got none. Okay, we'll see what happens.
You don't subscribe to that?
I do not, no.
Given all the quarterback issues we've seen in the last couple of years,
I
guys
do not.
Playing.
I do not.
60 plus players.
And part of that
the
is because there are no ways to get these kids coached up anymore.
But that's why you take a guy who's ready to play, like Penix,
and let him sit.
Not everybody gets to play right away.
Dude, honestly. And the thing is, like, if I could go back in time and tell you after they signed Cousins, they're going to draft Penix 8th overall, you'd be like, oh, great. They have their quarterback of the future. No chance. No chance. It's just nuts. It's a lot of ex post facto explanation. And just like, oh, no, that kind of makes sense. And yet,
we don't even know if Kirk is ready to play week one.
Cousins would never have signed there. Never.
They offered the most money.
He would never have signed there. Let's take a break. Daniel Jeremiah is going to join us next. 844-204-RICH, number to dial if you want to call. Let's talk O'Reilly Auto Parts, people. Or as you might know from their jingle, O-O-O, O'Reilly Auto Parts. They're in the business of keeping your car on the road. O'Reilly Auto Parts offers friendly, helpful service and the parts knowledge you need for all your maintenance and repairs. Because you know when you need your car fixed, you need somebody who knows what they're talking about and is helpful, has a smile on their face, and gets you back on the road. They've got thousands of parts and accessories in stock, either in-store or online, so you never have to worry if you're in a jam. The team at O'Reilly Auto Parts can test your battery for free in or out of your car. If it needs to be replaced, they'll help you just find the right battery for your vehicle. Need your windshield wipers replaced, a brake light fix, or a quick service? They'll help you find the right part or point you to the nearest local repair shop for help. Whether you're a car aficionado or an auto novice, you will find the employees at O'Reilly Auto Parts knowledgeable, helpful, and the best of all, friendly. Stop by O'Reilly Auto Parts today or visit us at O'ReillyAuto.com/Eisen. That's O'ReillyAuto.com/Eisen.
What's up, everyone? It's Reality Steve, your number one source for all things Bachelor Nation and reality TV. Every day, I'm giving you the behind-the-scenes juice and your info on all your Bachelor Nation stories and also interviewing some of your favorite reality stars. My name has been synonymous with spoilers, but I'm so much more than that. Give me a listen.
The Reality Steve Podcast, part of the Believe Network. Just search BLEAV on YouTube or wherever you listen.
Daniel Jeremiah is here back on the Rich Eisen Show Radio Network. I'm sitting at the Rich Eisen Show desk furnished by Grainger with supplies and solutions for every industry. Grainger has the right product for you. Call clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Daniel Jeremiah has stopped by and from the NFL Network and the Move the Sticks pod. DJ, I got to be honest with you. I started the show by still talking about Penix in Atlanta. I know that's going to lead to some eye rolling. I already seen some tweets, people saying that I'm yelling the loudest. Do I? I don't yell.
No,
I don't yell about this sort of thing. I'm head scratching over this, but I will place in front of you, which is the response that Peter Schrager forwarded on our draft set and that Chris Brockman just forwarded again, is that the QB purgatory is the worst thing. And if you can stay out of it for 10, 15 years, go for it. And I guess they decided to use draft capital after signing somebody for $100 million guaranteed is the best way to do that.
So here's where, and this is, I was actually looking at this because we've got our own podcast later today. And I was like, that all the different layers to this thing, you could literally, I know you're capable of doing it, Rich. You could do a 30-minute conversation with just yourself and list out all the different angles and arguments in place here. This is where I come down on it. To me, I think there's a financial component to it that hasn't been discussed at all in terms of how do you maximize the value of your roster. One of the reasons we had talked about, you know, with Brock Bowers and where he might go in the draft, it was hard to justify him going to a team that's already paid their quarterback, because once you've paid the quarterback, you have to maximize all your other dollars because they eat up such a big chunk of your cap. So if we look at where the Atlanta Falcons are and you look at other needs on their roster, it's not just, you know, we needed a pass rusher. You know, we could have taken a pass rusher there. It's what is it going to cost for you to get that position out on the free market in free agency? And how much savings are you getting by taking one there in the top 10? So you're getting a good player at a position of need, but you're also maximizing your limited resources because you've already paid the quarterback. So that's the way to maximize how you build out your roster. Now, one of the arguments I've heard, which I'd love to hear Brockman's explanation on this, because this is how I've heard this explained. We're a good team with Kirk Cousins, and we don't think we'll ever be picking up there at the top of the draft again. So we're going to take the quarterback now, assuming we're never going to be up there. But also with the explanation that we don't want to have a down year because we want to go from one quarterback to the next, and then we don't have that down year. And I sit here and go, well, wait a second. If that was what you're saying, then Kirk Cousins plays and plays well. And then once Kirk Cousins' play takes a dip, then you would be picking up there if you didn't have Penix. And then you would be able to solve your quarterback situation at that point in time. So those two pieces of information don't make any sense to me. I just look at it as you have a team that's ready to win. You've got a quarterback that's ready to go out there right now. I also talk about the financial side. To me, there's also the personal side, which is don't compare this to Green Bay. It is apples to oranges. There is equity built up with Rodgers and Favre inside their city, inside their fan base, inside their locker room, that the first time something went wrong, hey, this guy's already won us a Lombardi trophy. Like, there's Brett Favre and Aaron Rodgers aren't going to press. Kirk Cousins has no equity in that stadium, no equity with his teammates, no equity in that city. The first poor throw he has there, everybody in the stadium is going to be clamoring for his backup. So what I'm saying is that everybody's assuming this is just this smooth, great 2 years of Kirk Cousins, and then we go smoothly on to Michael Penix. This could be it could end up being a disaster on the other side of it. So that's where kind of I am on everything.
So in terms of what they could have done otherwise with eighth overall, guys on the board,
had your choice. You could go out there and get, you know, Dallas Turner, who's a, you know, a big time edge rusher. If you were comfortable with Latu's medicals, you know, he's the, you know, was the most polished pass rusher. You had Murphy there as well. I mean, look, I had Penix as my 34th player. So I like Michael Penix, but I do believe there are Michael Penixes that come along, you know, on a yearly basis. So that was where I was. I had lobbied for the Raiders to consider him at 13 because I could make the case that Michael Penix, even though he's my 34th player, is more valuable and is a better, more, you know, bigger talent than what they have at the position. I can't make that argument when you've got Kirk Cousins on there, who, when you talk to, you know, you talk to Kevin O'Connell, said, look, if this guy stays healthy last year, he firmly believes he would have been the MVP of the league with the start he was off to there. So I didn't see it as such. Now it's not, I like Michael Penix. I think Michael Penix is a good player. I think Michael Penix, you know, if he goes to another spot, would have been, you know, ready to jump in there and play. I didn't fully understand the fit there. And I'm imagining that Kirk Cousins would have felt the same way.
Daniel Jeremiah here on the Rich Eisen Show. So your best guess on number of first round quarterbacks that's going to wind up starting a game this fall? I know I asked you this on NFL Network, but I didn't.
Yeah.
Last time you were on here, because there were no draft choices selected. So what do you have? What do you think?
Well, I think in terms of starting a game is one question. And, you know, look, it's long season. So getting out there for a game, I think it's fair to say we see five or six of them get out there for a game. I would imagine if you're going to look at it where it is now, I would say if we start at the beginning, I think the first two guys are going to start from the jump and they get out there and they try and hopefully run out there for 17 games. I think Drake May, I think he does start this year. You know, maybe he doesn't start, you know, the first 4 to 8 games, but I think you'll see him on the back half of the year. I don't think Michael Penix, as long as Kirk Cousins stays healthy, plays. I think, in my opinion, the plan in Minnesota, I know Kevin came on with us and said, hey, we're going to have competition. I believe the plan is that they would like to sit J.J. McCarthy and get Sam Darnold through the year. And then Bo Nix, I think he'll get the bulk of the starts there. Whether or not that's week one, I think you'll see him for the bulk of the time. So really, Penix and McCarthy would be the two. I don't think the plan would be for them, you know, in a perfect world for them to play. Where Drake May, I'd give him half the year.
Daniel Jeremiah here on the Rich Eisen Show. Okay, so night two pick that jumps out at you, second, third rounder, that you think, boy, that was a great one right there.
I was curious to see right there at the top what Buffalo was going to do. You know, they traded out of the first round, and it was just kind of looking at their needs at receiver, and I was kind of fascinated to see which, you know, style of receiver they would look at. Traded off of Xavier Worthy, much was made about that, you know, give him to the Kansas City Chiefs. But I think I think Josh Allen is a big part of the guys they were looking for in terms of not only getting his opinion, but just trying to figure out what would work best with him. And they decided, hey, you know, Keon Coleman, that big frame, the size, they decided to go a little bit size over speed there. And I think if you look at some of the, you know, Josh Allen early in his career had protected the ball really well in the red zone. Then, you know, turnovers the last couple years, especially down there in the scoring area, got them in some trouble. So I think having a big bodied receiver like that, that can box guys out, that can kind of play above the rim, so to speak. Also, as well as, you know, big third down target. I thought it was fascinating that that's the style of receiver that they went for.
Okay. And then teams that you think really filled their need bucket in this draft. You know, I don't have all 32 draft soup to nuts, one through pick seven or what have you, seventh rounder. But which team do you think, or teams, filled up their needs that they had to have in this draft?
I love what the Steelers did, man. They started last year when they went out and got Samalo in free agency, and then they drafted Broderick Jones, and then they come back in this draft, and you get Fatanu from Washington to play left tackle. I love the fit there, the athleticism, the physicality there at left tackle. They go out and get Zach Frazier, one of the top centers in the draft, who's plug and play, who just is, you know, the wrestling background, the toughness, just kind of he oozes that he could be a stealer. And then they go out and get McCormick from South Dakota State, who's a real strong, powerful guard. Like, they have added a lot of young, talented resources to that offensive line. And then you also go out and get Roman Wilson, who you know well, Rich, who I thought was like a Jaden Reed type player. And we saw how quickly Jaden Reed transitioned with the Green Bay Packers. And they got him up and running, the success he had. So I feel like the Steelers, you know, I wouldn't say that they lost their way a few years ago, but they went from being, you know, one of the two or three most physical teams in the league, you know, year after year after year, to kind of, you know, it just was a, it didn't really have an identity offensively. And some of that, you know, was blowback on Matt Canada, but I also don't think they kind of knew who they were. And I think right now they have established they are an offensive line with two tight ends, two big physical tight ends. They've got two backs. Deontay Johnson's gone. They are going to be kind of a ground and pound team. And they also add into the mix now with the two quarterbacks that they have. Even though Russ is a little bit older, he can take some of those free yards. And we know what Justin Fields can do with his legs. So I feel like the Steelers kind of got back to who they are in this draft.
Interesting. What did you make of the Chargers' first draft with Harbaugh and how it's remaking the team that you've seen right there in front of you from the radio booth last few years?
Well, I do feel somewhat vindicated because throughout the whole process, I've said they're going to take an offensive lineman at five. And there was so much pushback saying there's no way. If Keenan leaves, Mike Williams leaves, they have to go wide receiver. And I'm like, there's two things in play here. There's the depth of this receiver class, which they can tap into outside the first round. And then this is a flag in the ground draft, you know, for Jim Harbaugh to establish what they're all about. You know, I mean, he wasn't secretive about it, Rich, in an era where you get non-answers at, you know, owners' meetings and the combine. I mean, he's done is extol the virtues and the value of the offensive line from the moment he got hired in that press conference throughout every media availability that he's had. So, you know, I didn't think it was should be too much of a shock, but everybody was still expecting to go receiver, and they go out and get the best offensive lineman in the draft, in my opinion. And Joe Alt, and then McConkey's there for him in the second round, who I loved, who's you know, really a complete wide receiver. I think Justin Herbert's going to love working with him. And then they go out, and I mean, I feel like almost every team we talk about, I can tell you the Michigan guy that they got. But Junior Colson is someone who not only is one of the better linebackers in the draft, he's, I got to believe, he's the only linebacker in the draft that's going to, you know, be playing in the exact same defense he played in college. So with the same defensive coordinator, the same head coach. So he's set up to get on the field right away and make an impact there. So it was just a, to use a Harbaugh frame, it was like kind of a meat and potatoes, maybe a little steak and milk. It was, you know, just exactly what the doctor ordered.
Yeah, the question is Alt going to play right tackle? But that's not what made him the fifth overall pick in the draft, right?
Yeah, so but he also... So he's young. He's like 21 years old.
Right.
He was a tight end until 2 years ago. So within 2 years, he went from never having played left tackle to being the fifth pick in the draft. And the transition from left tackle to right tackle is a lot less than the transition from tight end to left tackle. So the belief is this will not be that complicated. You know, his dad haven't played in the league for a million years. He's grown up around it. He'll be able to put that together. He'll be able to figure it out. I think they're pretty confident about that. I do know that they, you know, that Alt on his side of it wanted to know, like right after he was drafted, hey, what's the plan? Because I want to start repping, you know, whatever I'm going to be doing. I want to start working on that right now. So I thought that was fascinating. One other thing, Rich, I wanted to hit you on while I'm
yes,
thinking
sir.
Of it.
Ben?
You remember the conversation we had on, you know, the struggle to develop young quarterbacks?
Yes, sir.
We had a great conversation there. And I said, you know, I think virtual reality is I think that you're going to use technology to try and make up for the lack of time these guys are getting on the field. And Jaden Daniels, you know, he went through that at LSU and really used that virtual reality system, and he credits it a lot with his growth and development over the last year. There are quarterbacks in the NFL that I was made aware of today that are going to be making their way down to Baton Rouge to get their hands on this technology to be able to do the exact same thing that we were discussing in terms of being able to get reps even when you're not on the field.
And that's the point, you know, of trying to figure out how to get these young kids that are needing reps, decision-making reps,
yep,
actual real deal, breaking a sweat. How do you get them up to speed? I mean, with Penix going to be sitting there, how can he stay sharp or and get the pro ready, needing to get adjusted to the speed of the game type readiness? All these guys that get pushed up the draft or get pushed up into starting positions in the NFL. How do you do it? And just real quick, tell that story you told about you heard an actual bona fide backup quarterback in the NFL, what he has to do because he knew he wasn't getting the opportunities that he needed to stay sharp. Go ahead.
Yeah, he would go through the day with his team, get through practice where he would be, you know, doing some scout team stuff. But, you know, it's a different offense every week. He's not getting a chance to learn and grow and throw the routes and look at the combinations of routes he would be running in this particular offense. Just wasn't getting any work or any reps. And quite honestly, not even getting the number of throws that he would need. So practice would end. He would finish up his day at the facility. And then he had it set up at a junior college, you know, across town with his, you know, with a private quarterback coach, with a collection of receivers, which I'd assume are junior college kids or high school kids, whoever he could get out there. And they would basically kind of go through. He would have the game plan for the week for the, you know, for the real offense, for the number one offense. And he would kind of just run through it on air. You know, there's no defense out there, but get a chance to just run through things on air just to get his throws in, to get his work in, to have them looking at his mechanics to make sure he's staying sharp in that regard. But he had to basically outsource his development.
It just gobsmacks me. In the NFL, where there's revenue coming out of every stream possible, that an actual bona fide backup quarterback in the NFL feels the need to have to take it into his own hands and create his own mini camp after work. It's just nuts, you know. But Daniel Jeremiah here on the Rich Eisen Show. I've got Howie Roseman coming up in about 40 minutes. What'd you think of his draft, DJ?
I loved it. You know, it's funny because a lot of times, you know, people talk about draft grades and how you view different classes. It's just interesting. A lot of people that I've had ties to in terms of who I've worked with, I'm sure that there's things that have rubbed off on me over the years in terms of style of player that I like and what I believe in, because I feel like a lot of times it's those guys that when I look back, oh man, they nailed it every year. They nailed it. Because there's certain people you see players the same as. So, you know, I've worked there and I've known Howie for a long time. And I think we have some core beliefs that we share there. But when you have a problem on your team, I believe that full resources and do whatever you have to do. Solve the biggest problem. Don't solve a little bit of this problem, a little bit of that problem. Identify what your biggest weakness is and attack it with ferocity. And that was their secondary. And they went out and they got, you know, two of the top four corners in the draft. So I thought it was outstanding.
Yeah, and you see the rest of their draft and going ahead and getting Jeremiah Trotter's kid. By the way, 54 is available for him to wear.
Love that.
I
love that.
You know,
and Will Shipley's going to be a nice compliment to Saquon Barkley. How about how about that backfield?
Right. I mean, they already have Boston Scott to kill the Giants. So, you know, there's that. What'd you make of the Cowboys draft, Daniel?
Yeah, I was a little surprised when they ended up trading back. I thought they would take Graham Barton and kind of just solve that position right then and there as someone who come in and play center. But I like Guyton too as a tackle who's, you know, got unbelievable, you know, size and athleticism and tools to work with there. So they went out and added him to the mix. I know we were kicking around the idea of what they were doing at running back. They, you know, they brought Zeke back. Usually I'm pretty strong in my belief that I want fresh young legs at the running back position, and they have some solid backs already on their roster. They go out and get Zeke. I thought there were upgrades all throughout the draft, even into the last round. I thought there was a back there that I really liked out of Memphis. So they ended up deciding to stick with what they have on hand, and that's part of the challenge. Is you got to not only evaluate the draft class every year, but you have to be able to evaluate that draft class compared to what you have on your roster. And so, you know, hey, that's what they did. They looked at their group and felt like there was a cutoff and to a point where, hey, we like the guys that we have already on the roster better than what's available. So we'll see. We'll see how that all works out.
All right. Last one for you, Daniel. And not to turn you into an information man, but you get so many people hitting you up and telling you this and telling you that. And I don't know what you're willing to share. What are you hearing coming out of the draft about why there were no trades at the top? You know, why was there only that one for the Jets and the Vikings to move up to 10? What did you hear that you might be willing to share about how many were trying and why it didn't happen? Anything like that, Daniel?
Well, I know there was a lot of action at 3. So Drake May was a big target with Minnesota and the Giants. And I know there something had been said about Elliott Wolf saying he didn't get the offer that they thought was worth it. Well, there was no offer that was worth it because from what I was told, they were monumental packages put together to go up there for the third pick. So that turned out that pick just simply wasn't for sale. So that wasn't a lack of commitment from those teams. There were very, 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 very strong offers put forth there. So you get the top three picks. Once those didn't change, I felt like with Minnesota, the belief in the two quarterbacks that were going to be remaining there, and I'll put Bo Nix off to the side, but I think between J.J. McCarthy and Penix, that the Minnesota Vikings were comfortable with either one. And so they were just going to ride that out. And then once you saw Penix go off the board, then they just paid the, I guess it's like when you're, I have never done this, Rich, but when you play blackjack, insurance.
That's right.
They decided just take the insurance and get up one spot to make sure that they got him. But that was the, that was the game right there.
You used the word very three times. So you're talking, I would imagine, multiple ones to move up to three? Like what are you willing to share about what you heard on
no,
this?
I won't go too far into it, but yeah, this was not a, this wasn't a collection of day two picks. Let's put it that way. It was very, very strong.
And the Patriots just said, no, we got our guy. And that's
nope.
it. Cause they ended in that pick right away. Like we were barely done talking about Drake May once around the table. And it's all of a sudden pick is in. Like the Patriots didn't stick and stay too deep into their clock on Thursday night.
No, I mean, I guess they just kind of wanted to see. In some ways, it can be affirming, when you have a guy that you feel like you want to pick and you still have the open for business sign out on the front door. When you see the offers for that pick that come in some ways, it can kind of embolden your belief in the player that, hey, we're not the only ones that think this guy's pretty good.
Right.
Apparently, there's some other people that that feel the same way.
You're the best, DJ. Loved it. Love hanging with you. Great to see your son who was there as well. Great to hang out. It's just, you're so awesome at it. You really are. You know your stuff, and you do it in such a way with such a style and such a grace and such a sense of humor that it's perfect. It strikes the best tone, and I can't thank you. I'm over the moon when I get to work with you. So thanks again, Daniel.
Well, I feel the exact same way about you, as you know, and I feel like every year it gets better. It's more fun. We've got such great chemistry with our group up there, and we've got a great quarterback. So appreciate you, buddy.
Right back at you, DJ. That's Move the Sticks. Check out his podcast with Bucky Brooks right as soon as you are done with this show, and check out everything he's got to say about the draft. That's Daniel Jeremiah right here on the Rich Eisen Show. Okay, let's beat it to break. We come back and we'll talk a little bit of the NBA playoffs and what we saw last night. This superstar rising in the upper Midwest is something else. That's next. This is the Rich Eisen Show.
Afford Anything talks about how to avoid common pitfalls, how to refine your mental models, and how to think about how to think.
Paula, while certainly you can mess up on $1 million a year, it is far less likely than it is on $30,000 a year.
Right.
I would meet wonderful people that were struggling with a budget that was super tight. It was 100%. You need to make more money.
Make smarter choices and build a better life.
Afford Anything, wherever you listen.
Happy 70th birthday to the one great Jerry Seinfeld back here on the Rich Eisen Show. We just showed a clip of Jerry Seinfeld appearing on this show years ago when I went and visited him at a junket here in Los Angeles. He's coming in on Thursday's show. He turned 70 years old today. I got to tell you, I can't wait to have Jerry Seinfeld here in this guest chair.
Heck yeah.
On this show. It'll be great. So keep that in mind. When the Phoenix Suns got Bradley Beal to add to Booker and Durant and switched everything up, sent Monty Williams on his way and figured out we're going to go with this trio. They did not see Anthony Edwards coming.
I mean, who has?
Well, the T-Wolves did.
I'll tell you what,
think he was going to be this good.
He's, by the way, what we are seeing from Anthony Edwards as he throws one down to essentially wrap up a four-game sweep on the Suns. We're showing that dunk to put him up five late in the game on Bradley Beal, who had a dreadful first year with the Suns and has a ton of money still left in his contract. But we'll talk about the Suns' next steps with Chris Mannix shortly. I got to be honest with you, man. And, I I know there's a lot of comparisons right now that you're hearing. You're hearing the name that's being thrown out?
Oh, yeah.
It's Michael Jordan.
MJ,
That's a steep hill to climb and one that I'm not climbing.
He looks just like him.
But I know he does. But what's the one thing here? There's the ring. I just can't get there. But this exchange from last night's post-game press conference where he's sitting next to Karl Anthony Towns, whose team it was when he showed up first overall, right? Like the Timberwolves will go only as Karl Anthony Towns goes. And Karl Anthony Towns needs to get to a certain spot in order to lead the Timberwolves to a championship. Now I think he's just, you know, a very crucial piece. It's Anthony Edwards' show, man. Mm. But and this, what you're about to see and hear on the radio, this is Michael Jordan. This right here. Hit it.
Let me just say, tonight he wasn't in foul trouble. Like the first three games, he just kept fouling. And tonight, I told him, what did I tell you last game?
He said, yo, can you find a way not to foul him? I said, I'm going to try.
Like if you watch the game, every time in the third quarter when we would grow a lead, it's because he's in the game. Because they don't have a matchup for him. I'm like, Cat, we're not going to win game four if you foul. I told him yesterday, we're not going to win game four if you keep fouling. You keep fouling. And you see what he did in the third quarter. You see what he did in the fourth quarter. Like, he's like I always tell you, he's the best offensive player on the team. Like, if he's not in foul trouble, it's a problem for any team that got a guard is because he can stretch the floor. He can post. He can play off the catch. He can pass. I mean, like, he can do everything. So we just got to keep him from getting in foul trouble, man. He's going to be great every night.
Probably because I was trying to play more defense.
I mean, just stop
fouling. Yeah.
Okay. Probably because I'm playing better defense. No, just quit effing fouling. To his face. Man. And by the way,
that was amazing.
Does that sound like the kid who likes talking about what he's calling his dog? Like all the, you know, cutesy, funny stuff when he first came in the league. And
dude is a killer. Man.
Oh my goodness, is he ever? He looks Karl Anthony Towns right in the face after Karl Anthony Towns is just like, plus I'm playing better defense. Just quit effing fouling, man. And then for the radio audience, he then just turned straight to the media. Like, what's the next question? This is his world we're paying rent in right now, and whoever's coming next for the Timberwolves better look out. And I hope Chris Finch can get on a scooter or something, because apparently he tore his patella tendon in that collision with Mike Conley. So I'm hoping this is not going to affect a single thing, because we are watching an ascension.
22 years old.
40 points in a closeout game in Phoenix to say, nice super team you have there.
Yeah,
nice you don't win a playoff game, and we win our first playoff series in two decades.
Bye.
Wow, that was something else. And on top of it, you know, he was like throwing down dunks on Durant, right?
And then telling him about it.
And
then like, hey, you were my favorite player growing up.
So how does Durant feel about this? Durant was asked after the game about how Anthony Edwards is looking forward to by the way playing on Team USA with him in the Olympics. Hit it.
Ant was saying that he's looking forward to playing with you at the Olympics. What have you thought about his growth and the leap and his performance in this series?
So impressed with Ant. My favorite player to watch. Just grown so much since he came into the league at 22. Just his love for the game just shines bright. And that's something that's one of the reasons why I like him the most, because he just loves basketball. He's grateful to be in this position. He's taking advantage of every opportunity he's gotten. Love everything about Ant, everything, and be watching him going forward. And you know he's going to go out there and play extremely hard every single night. But was really impressed with him, and it's going to be somebody I'm following for the rest of his career.
Man,
high praise.
Is he getting the Nuggets next?
Whew. Oh, I thought you meant is Durant going to the Nuggets next? Because that's what he does.
Let's be positive here. This kid, I'm telling you what.
22 years old, man. Look out.
And Durant, like, he might be, you know, getting in Durant's face, dunking on him and whatever. And Durant's like, love him. My favorite player to watch, says Kevin Durant, after he gets swept by him. He's got respect for him. Whoa.
The batons are getting passed this season.
Darn Skippy. Yeah. Chris Mannix coming up.
John brings his skewed sense of humor. Jeff brings tips to cut strokes off your next round. Together, it's those weekend golf guys.
They'll pay a lot of money to PXG and Titleist and Callaway and on and on and on, right? How many yards do you think you're going to pick up with that extra driver? I think I can get an extra 5 to 10. What if I give you 15 to 20? You pay me more.
Jeff Smith teaches on the sliding scale.
Those Weekend Golf Guys, the podcast, part of the Believe Network. Just search BLEAV on YouTube or wherever you listen.